With the resources of MacFormat Magazine, this is a special edition of MacFormat This Week from Macworld Expo in San Francisco. Hello, everyone. I'm Brad Gibson. Well, it might not have had the pomp, circumstance, and surprise of the 2007 Expo where the iPhone made its debut, but this year's Macworld Expo certainly had some major announcements that when we look back years from now, we'll remember it for a cutting-edge laptop and Apple's entry into the online movie rental business. In the next 30-plus minutes, we'll recap the major developments from this year's Expo and give you the perspective of myself and two other veteran Expo attendees who combined have covered the majority of the San Francisco shows. Before we begin our roundtable discussion of the major announcements, let us recap the big news from Apple. Apple announced a new laptop to its portable family, the MacBook Air, and there's little doubt it is special in many ways. Steve Jobs highlighted its main features.
So, what are the features? 3 pounds, an unprecedented 0.16 to 0.76 inch thickness, a 13.3 inch full-size display, a full-size keyboard, a backlit keyboard, multi-touch gestures on a very spacious trackpad, EyeSight camera built in for out-of-the-box video conferencing and horsing around with photo booth. 1.6 gigahertz Core 2 Duo as standard, 2 gigabytes of memory standard, an 80 gig hard drive standard, with an option to go to a 64 gigabyte solid state drive, 802.11n Wi-Fi standard, Bluetooth 2.1 EDR standard, and of course our MagSafe connector. And all of these features and more in the thinnest notebook in the world.
The Air comes in two models, a 1.6 gigahertz model with an 80 gigabyte hard drive and 2 gigabytes of memory for £1,199, and a high-end model with 2 gigabytes of memory and a solid-state 64 gigabyte flash memory drive for a whopping £2,028. Both models will start shipping around the first week of February. But for many, it's what the Air doesn't have that is controversial. It doesn't have an optical drive. It doesn't have an Ethernet port. It doesn't have a SIM card slot like many Windows laptops. The hard drive model uses a slow 4200 RPM drive, and its battery, like the iPod, is not removable. We'll get to all that in a few minutes in our roundtable. Next, the announcement of iTunes movie rentals. Notice I say rentals and not buying movies, unlike the way you buy music on iTunes. Jobs announced the participation of 10 movie studios, including Touchstone, MGM, Universal, Sony Pictures, 20th Century Fox, and Warner Brothers, just to name a few. Jobs explained how the rental system will work.
We're going to launch with over 1,000 films by the end of February. 1,000 films by the end of February. And we're going to have films from the studios 30 days after their DVD release. You can watch them anywhere. You can watch them on your Macs, watch them on your PCs, watch them on all current generation iPods, watch them on your iPhone. You can watch them instantly. When you say rent, if you have a modern broadband connection, you'll be able to watch them in less than 30 seconds. What are the rules? When you rent a movie, you have 30 days to start watching it. And after you start watching it, you have 24 hours to finish watching it. You can watch it as many times as you want within 24 hours. And you can actually transfer the films to another device in the middle of watching them. So you can watch the first half on your computer, realize you've got a flight to catch, transfer the film to your iPod, and watch it, the rest of it on the iPod on the airplane if you'd like. What are they going to cost? To rent a library title is going to cost just $2.99. To rent a new release, $3.99.
But as is usually the case, movie rentals will not be available in Europe and the UK until sometime later this year. The problem? The licensing of movie content for international sale, which is not the fault of Apple, but a tedious legal process undertaken by the studios themselves. So much like the debut of the iTunes Music Store years back, those in Europe will be waiting a while for Homer Simpson and Bruce Willis on the big screen. So how will you watch these movie rentals? Apple is hoping you'll purchase the new Apple TV, a revamped TV interface that will allow you to buy movies over the internet and watch them directly from a widescreen TV. Here's Steve Jobs on the problems of getting movies from the internet to your telly and the features of the new Apple TV.
I have to say, all of us have tried. We have Microsoft, Amazon, TiVo, Vudu, Netflix, Blockbuster. We've all tried to figure out how to get movies over the internet and onto a widescreen TV. And you know what? We've all missed. No one has succeeded yet. We tried with Apple TV. And Apple TV was designed to be an accessory for iTunes and your computer. That's not what people wanted. We learned that what people really wanted was about movies, movies, movies. And we weren't delivering that. So we're back with Apple TV Take Two. It still syncs beautifully to your computer if you want, but no computer is required to use Apple TV Take Two. So here's what you can do. You can rent movies directly on your widescreen TV. You don't have to rent them on a computer and move them over. You can rent them directly on your widescreen TV with Apple TV. And you can rent them in DVD quality, and you can rent them in HD with full... with Dolby Digital 5.1 surround sound. You can also now view audio and video podcasts right on Apple TV. You can choose from over 125,000 podcasts in the iTunes podcast directory and see them right on your widescreen TV. Photos, you can get photos from your computer, but you can now go right over the internet and get photos from Flickr and .Mac. And of course, YouTube. We've been working with the guys at YouTube for quite some time, and we've expanded the selection. There's over 50 million videos that you can now watch on your widescreen TV from YouTube. And this has worked out so great. Our customers love this. You can now buy TV shows and music right on your widescreen TV with Apple TV. And if you are using a computer, it'll automatically sync them right back to your computer. And of course, you can play iTunes content, watch photos directly from your computer if you want to do that. It's even better than the original Apple TV in this regard. So all of this stuff on the new Apple TV.
Apple TV is available at £199 for the 40-gigabyte model and £269 for the 160-gigabyte model. Those were the major announcements from Apple at Macworld Expo. Now, our roundtable discussion on not only Apple's announcements, but other major new products that debuted at Expo is with our usual cast of characters, MacFormat Deputy Editor Chris Finn and MacFormat This Week's Associate Producer Misha Sakalaropoulou. I started our discussion by asking Chris Finn for his thoughts on the MacBook Air.
I've got problems with the MacBook Air. There's some compromises, there's some stuff I don't like, but at the end of the day, as soon as you pick one up and you realize how light it is, how slim it is, how utterly drop-dead beautiful it is, then all that stuff tends to go away because it's only got one USB port, there's no Ethernet, it's a sealed battery, it's not ultra-portable except in size, except in weight, because it's still a full-size keyboard, full-size screen. But, as I say, you pick it up, and it's gorgeous. It's a lovely, lovely, lovely device.
Yeah, you mentioned a lot of problems with it, or issues, I guess you could say. The battery is not replaceable. There's no Ethernet port. There's no SIM card slots, that kind of thing. But I'm sure Apple would turn around and immediately say, well, if you need those things, you can either add them additionally or buy the MacBook Pro or the MacBook.
Absolutely. I mean, one guy commented on my story on the MacFormat website saying that the fact that it's only got one USB port isn't a problem because you have USB hubs. And I absolutely agree with you. You're right, you have. But the whole point of an ultra-portable is you don't want to have to carry around crap with you like USB hubs that have got their power supplies and all that sort of stuff. I'd rather have seen a few more USB ports because as soon as you plug in, let's say, the optional £15 USB to Ethernet adapter, that's your USB slot filled. And you can't put a mouse in, you can't put a USB modem in, nothing.
What did you think of the MacBook Air?
I think it's a cool product. I think at first glance, everyone's very impressed with it. But I think when you start actually thinking about using it, it's not necessarily the best solution. And I'm not too sure who Apple really had in mind when they built it. It's more expensive than a MacBook. It's has fewer features than a MacBook. So I can really only see one potential user, that being someone who primarily works with a desktop and wants a laptop, as a secondary system to use on the go. But the price tag is going to be a problem for people who already have a capable Mac. And certainly the people, laptops have gotten fast enough recently that the latest MacBook Pro is completely a desktop replacement, and it's really nice. I got rid of my tower and moved to a MacBook Pro, and it's really nice having everything with you all the time. And with a MacBook Air, that's just not going to be possible. I think it's cool. I would love to have one, but then I start thinking about how I could actually integrate it into my workflow, and I'm not sure whether it's going to be the product that everyone was hoping it would be.
I think it's a phenomenal technical exercise. I think as an exercise in engineering, as an exercise in what you can do with today's technology, it's astonishing, but it's not necessarily a practical device. But as both Misha and I know you have said as well yourself, Brad, you do forget all that as soon as you pick one up, because it is beautiful.
The problem I have with the battery is, first of all, I don't believe any of Apple's battery times. They say 5 hours. You know, we have MacBook Pros. You know, we know we're not getting anywhere near that. Yes, battery life is much better than it used to be, but it's nowhere near that. And again, that obviously has a lot to do with how you use your own laptop. So.
Yeah, I mean, on the battery point, Apple said 5 hours with wireless and, you know, the screen turned on and actually using it, as opposed to the previous times when they've claimed 5 hours, but it's only been achieved by dimming the screen and not really doing anything with the laptop. I know I pulled out the plug on a fully charged MacBook, and Mac OS X itself reported just about 4 hours of battery life. You know, that's the internal calculator. So, you know, you get into the problem with the sealed battery on long trips. If you're going across the Atlantic or traveling anywhere far away, you know, you're stuck. You're going to have that 4 hours, which is maybe good for a laptop, but that's it. And furthermore, the more you charge and discharge a battery, the less its capacity is going to be. So, you know, within a year, that 4 hour battery life, if it is in fact four, will probably be, you know, down to 3.5 or less, depending on use. And then you're really stuck. You have to, you know, Apple will invariably offer an option to mail in the MacBook Air and get its battery swapped out the way it does with the iPhone or the iPod, but it's going to be a charge, it's going to be inconvenient, and there'll certainly be, you know, some issues when people start seeing these systems having 2 hours of battery life a couple years down the road. Anyone who's had a, you know, laptop before that's more than a few years old knows that original battery is pretty much, you know, useless.
My personal feeling about this, I just have a real problem with this battery, as we've been talking. This computer is supposed to be a portable. And portable means that you free yourself from any connections anywhere. That's why the wireless is in it. So why not, unless there's a technical reason, that's the only thing I can think of, why not make that battery portable to replace it so it really is a freedom type of device that doesn't require you to connect it to any wall? I mean, I think they've made a major mistake here. Really, I think that takes away from its portability, or calling it a truly portable device.
Absolutely. We've talked on this podcast before. I'm a great fan of Asus's EPC, the little £220 9-inch screen, or a 7-inch screen originally, tiny little ultra-portable. And they're fantastic devices, but that's a true ultra-portable because the keyboard's smaller, the screen's smaller, it's about the size of a hardback book. It's a fantastically easy-to-tote device, whereas the MacBook Air, the only thing you're really getting is lightness. That's the only additional portability feature you get.
It's going to be interesting to see how well this thing sells, and I would imagine that Apple, as we know, when they release quarterly numbers, they like to bundle everything into families, portable family, desktop family. I doubt that we're going to see individual breakdowns of how well this sells, especially if it doesn't sell well. So,
yeah, I was speaking to a friend of mine who works for a company called OQO, which makes the, you know, what's really the world's smallest laptop. It's a full-featured Windows box that, you know, weighs 1 pound. It has a tiny keyboard, a tiny screen. It costs more than the MacBook Air. And he was saying that the sentiment over at the company at OQO was, you know, one of somewhat disappointment, because everyone knew Apple was coming out with this ultra-portable, and they were hoping it would actually be more of a competitor to their own system to sort of advance the market and introduce new technologies. And they're saying, you know, the market that they're after is extremely pleased with this device that they have, which is only 1 pound, not three, and it doesn't have a 13-inch screen deliberately so that you can fit it into a pocket, not into an envelope or a bag, as it were. So I think it, in a way, you know, it's a missed opportunity by Apple.
You're talking about how well it's going to sell, and I think it actually will sell reasonably well. I think certainly for top-level executives, I think people who have more money than sense, I think for people who value style over substance a lot of the time. But we do have to talk about the cost. I mean, £1,199 for the base models, it's fine. It's not great, it's not fantastic, but it's not dreadful. They could have charged an awful lot more, I think. But the cost of the SSD model is phenomenal. I mean, Apple will charge you in the base spec model a full £639 to upgrade your 80 gig hard disk to a 64 gig, so 16 gig less, solid state device. Now, with a solid state, you're going to get better battery life, you've got more reliability because you haven't got moving parts, But that's £639. It's a phenomenal amount of money.
Well, so Chris, I think they deliberately did this because they've got limited supply of this device and they're trying to discourage people unless you really have the money to spend. That's why I think they've jacked it up so much. All right, so we move on to the second big announcement here at Macworld Expo, and that was the Apple TV and the movie rental program that was announced that included more than 7 different studios. I think we've criticized Apple TV, I know I have, in print a lot, that it really was lacking more of a toy than anything. It is now really the product I think that Apple really wanted it to be. And more importantly, I now think that because it's a standalone device, Apple has now entered a totally different universe now to compete with the Toshibas, the Sonys, the Panasonics as a standalone electronic device that is an entertainment device to compete with others.
Yeah, I'm feeling quite pleased with myself, actually, because I made the prediction months and months ago that the Apple TV was, in a sense, a Trojan horse. Apple just wanted to get into people's homes, and once they had, then they'd sort of put in this new firmware update, which they've just done, to enable things like the movie rental. And you're right, I mean, people like Vudu and Netflix should be really worried right now, because what Apple's managed to do is, technically, very, very simple. They haven't done anything particularly exciting with technology, but what they've managed to do is use their clout to negotiate these deals with, as you say, the big 4 movie studios plus a whole lot more. Basically, they've got the movie industry covered. There's not a huge amount of content necessarily available right now for movies for rent, but the fact they've actually managed to do these deals to convince Hollywood that it's a good thing to do is astonishing. This is more about, the news here is not Apple makes new Apple TV. It's Apple convinces movie industry that this is the correct channel for them to be going through.
I think the Vudu, their biggest competitor at this point, they have 5,000 movies online. Apple's going to have 1,000. I was talking to someone yesterday in the industry who was telling me that they think that this Apple TV might have a real problem because they made it wireless, where Vudu has gone with a direct connection, and that people might be disappointed in that wireless connection in terms of speed, depending upon how far that wireless hub is that's giving them that signal. So that could be issues that people need to think about. What really pops into my mind the most, Misha, is, okay, so you've got Apple TV. A lot of people have satellite receivers and cable systems that offer pay-per-view movies at $2.99 or $3.99. What's going to make this one different, and how is Apple going to stand out just because they've got this box?
Well, I think, you know, that could be a real problem for Apple, and Chris thinks that the Apple TV now is a product that it should have been and that it's going to finally have a bit more of a foothold in people's homes. And I just don't think that the average consumer is thinking of acquiring a device that is not a media player itself. It doesn't play DVDs. It doesn't play Blu-ray discs. This idea of I'm going to plug in this box, this very, you know, nondescript box, and start downloading movies and downloading media. I mean, the first version didn't, you know, the first version of the Apple TV wasn't so successful because the idea of syncing your media between your computers and then this device that can store some of your media but not all of it. I mean, you have to be fairly technically proficient to even get that working and to even understand what's going on there. So they made it a step easier and allowed you to use a device without needing to synchronize anything. But I still don't think that a lot of people are going to say, oh, you know, fantastic, I'll spend the money to get this device in my home and it'll save me a trip to the store to get a DVD. It'll make Netflix less appealing because I can get it on demand. I think it'll be more successful than it was. I think Apple's not obviously in the market to stay. These deals with the movie studios are by far the most impressive part of the announcement. But I think the product is still probably a couple more revisions away from being the sort of thing that you say, oh yeah, this makes sense. Everyone's going to want one. There had been some speculation before Expo that Apple might finally announce its movements with regards to Blu-ray, since the format seems to be winning the, you know, the format wars. And I think if Apple had come out with a Apple TV on its own and then an Apple TV combo Blu-ray player, maybe the device, you know, it would be easier for people to equate, oh, Apple TV is the high def and next generation solution. And on its own, I think that message is still going to be muddied with consumers who were already confused about the format war. Now you're telling them they're going to be downloading high def movies, and I don't know.
Well, there's been some developments in the past couple of weeks with Blu-ray, and it looks like Blu-ray is going to be the premier format that people are, that studios are picking. So I think Apple's been waiting for that to decide, and they've been in the Blu-ray camp. And now that it looks like that's going to be the case, I would expect probably in the next year we'll see an Apple TV that actually has a Blu-ray recorder built in. You don't believe so?
No, I don't think so. I think the reason, if they were going to do it at all, they should have done it now. Because the problem is, as Misha absolutely rightly says, Apple could muddy the waters if they start mucking about with Blu-ray, with physical media, and with download media, because people get confused by it. Apple, I think, wants to really push the notion, the one pure, clear message that they want to do digital media distribution. There's no technical reason why they can't do a drive. There's no technical reason why they still can't do a drive, because as we all know, there's a USB port on the back of the Apple TV. There's no reason why you can't have a second slice beneath the Apple TV that's got an optical drive in it for doing movie playing. But I think Apple won't do that, because that muddies their message about media distribution, and I think they don't want to do that. But again, as Misha says, this is certainly a product that's very much designed and aimed for and will be bought by a very particular subset of the population. My mum won't buy one. My mum wouldn't buy one if there was a media drive in it. It's a specific thing that your sort of alpha geeks and your first generation, your early adopters will buy and like. But it's a small pond, but I think that's quite important for Apple and for the movie studios as well, because it's a way for them to put a toe in the water and start doing some developments with online digital media distribution.
Yeah, I think the idea of just crowding around your television and watching your media, watching your photos is just too new and too different for people to understand. I'm very much a fan of digital media, and I don't have an Apple TV because I have a Mac Mini hooked up instead, which does give me that DVD drive. It does give me gives me a full computer, and as great and as simple as Apple's made the Apple TV interface, guess what? You know, using directional controls to navigate a menu and then having to use the same directional controls to specify letters to search for stuff versus just hitting a few keystrokes on a wireless keyboard and having access to everything on your Mac. It's, you know, the price difference, it's cheaper now. It's still, you know, I'm not even sure if they made it half the price if it would still be any, if it would sell any more than what it already is.
It really annoys me that Apple still maintains its stance on not allowing the Apple TV to do the one thing that its name suggests it does do, TV. Yeah. It's stupid. I mean, I can understand why Apple won't do it themselves. They're now a media distribution company themselves. They want people to buy media through them. Fine. But don't stop companies like Elgato and Equinox from developing third-party products that can plug into the back that makes your Apple TV do TV. It's insane.
All right, so we move on to the third big announcement we thought of, and that was the iPhone firmware update. We predicted this update on our January 7th show, and it actually did happen. Misha, you've had a chance to really fool around with this new firmware update as you have the iPhone. Tell us a little bit more about it.
Well, you know, I think it's important to note that we predicted it only because videos that were leaked ahead of the expo proved to indeed be true. The biggest feature of this upgrade for me is the new location-aware Google Maps service. Apple's teamed up with both Google and another company to effectively turn the iPhone into a GPS-like device using either cell phone tower triangulation or Wi-Fi hotspot triangulation. This is extremely convenient if you're out and about and need to make directions or need to get directions to someplace. It also allows you to quickly find where you are, and as part of this new Maps with Location capability, you can actually add pinpoints to the map and save areas of interest. So if you're walking down the street and you run across a store that you think you might want to go back to at some point, you can easily make a note of that right on the map itself on your iPhone. And location-aware technology in and of itself opens up potentially huge doors for iPhone users and for Apple and Google in terms of services they can deliver. There was this patent Apple filed about a year and a half ago now that was recently granted to them that effectively would allow customers to order services without having to wait in line. So if you're, if you have your iPhone and you're near a Starbucks, you could order a latte without waiting in line, and then the Starbucks store would notify your phone when your coffee's ready and you could go pick it up. And with location-aware maps, this is just going to, the possibility of actually delivering that is certainly much more realistic.
Give us a couple of the other big announcements in this firmware update, which is free.
Well, the only one that's really of note, in my opinion, is the ability to sort of do web clips of websites. where you capture a portion of a website or just the whole website, and you're able to make a button directly to that website or that part of the website that, that resides in your home screen. So effectively, it's like one-touch bookmarks for Safari, which is handy. Everything else is really, you know, either features that should have been there to begin with. For example, the ability to text message multiple people. I mean, it was really sort of amusing seeing Steve demonstrate this feature like it was this novel new idea when you've been able to do it for almost a decade with other phones. Yeah. And other things like being able to, you know, specify, you know, subtitles or languages and movies that you're watching on the iPhone. Well, you should have been able to do that anyway if the movie file had those features. So mostly features that are nice but not really notable in and of themselves.
All right, so we move on to the iPod Touch update, which is going to cost £12.99. There's a legal reason as to why Apple has to charge for this update. I know many people, including myself, complained, why are they charging for this iPod Touch update? But they have to by law. And so we move on to the fact of, well, exactly what is in this Touch update? Tell us a little bit about that, Chris.
Big thing, mail. The iPod Touch finally gets mail, and I think the reason that's happened, I've said this before in the podcast and in print, is because with Apple allowing third-party developers to create apps for the iPhone and for the iPod Touch, it was only a matter of time before somebody else developed a third-party mail app. So why doesn't Apple just put its own mail app on there anyway?
And they probably added it because I complained, if you remember correctly, when it was announced, why no mail on this? And I was really complaining big time about it, and maybe they just listened to me, so who knows?
Yes, obviously, Brad and Mac Format in general does have the ear of Apple, we should point out. Now, there's other stuff in here as well. We've got Google Maps, the maps have been added to the iPod Touch, the stock widgets, the notes, and the weather widgets as well. So basically, you're achieving feature parity with the iPhone in terms of the apps that are actually on there. Mail's the big thing. And as you say, there are legal reasons for the charge. It's to do with, if you have a look on Wikipedia, if you Google or look search in Wikipedia for SOX, you'll find the Sarbanes-Oxley case, which is very arcane accounting practices, and it doesn't make any difference to the consumer, but as I say, there is an accounting reason for why this charge has to be made. However, Apple had to make a charge. Quite why they decided to make the charge £12.99 is, of course, up for debate. It's at their discretion how much they charged.
Right. Okay, let's move on to Time Capsule, which was a new announcement that I don't think anybody really expected. Tell us about Time Capsule and why you think it's so important, Chris.
Time Capsule's cool. It's basically an Airport Extreme base station with a hard disk in it. It comes in two versions, a 500 gig version and a 1 terabyte version, and it's designed, as the name suggests, as a sort of peripheral for Time Machine. So basically, it's your entire network hub for your home with a hard disk in it, and you can back up your Macs on that network wirelessly over 802.11n, if your Macs support it, to that device. Fantastic, transparent, easy-to-use backup. But I do have one concern, which is that one of the touted features in Leopard was the ability to do Time Machine backups over a network, over an Airport Extreme base station, to any USB hard disk that was plugged into the back of an Airport Extreme base station. That feature seemed to be pulled at the last minute, although some people have hacked it to make it work. It seems to be a little bit buggy, which is probably why it was pulled. But I really worry now that if Apple's bringing out the Time Capsule that they want you to buy, they're not going to put any resources behind fixing that problem, thus allowing people with any old third-party hard disk plugged into the Airport Extreme base station to back up wirelessly to their hard disk.
All right, so let's move on to some of the best picks that both Misha and Chris saw at the show. We're going to quickly move through these. Chris, you had three, and let's begin with the Cinemizer glasses. You really liked these, didn't you?
Yeah, they're really well made. We've seen this sort of thing before. What they are basically is a pair of very chunky-looking visor, sunglassy-type things, which have got two screens in them, which sit in front of your eyes. And it creates the impression of a large screen a couple of meters in front of you. Now, we've seen these before, and they've always been, without exception, utterly dreadful. I mean, I confess I do have a slightly British reaction to these things anyway, because I think they look a little bit silly when you're wearing them. But so I would never be seen dead wearing them in public transport. But that may change. It's the same sort of thing as people using mobile phones on the public transport or using a laptop on public transport. But the nice things, these ones are made by Carl Zeiss. They're nice, nice things. They're really well made. They're very, very slick, very well produced. And the quality is much, much higher than I've seen before. They're very expensive. I only know Euro pricing, and they're about €370. So they're very, very pricey.
Wow.
but they're quite sweet. I'm looking forward to giving them a bit of an extended test on the plane home from San Francisco.
All right, and your next was Microsoft Office 08. I know you'll be reviewing this in the next issue of Mac Format, so we're not going to go over great detail now, but it finally did come out, and I think people have really been waiting for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, the Office 2008 review is the next issue of Mac Format. The one thing to say that's really important about it is, apart from the fact that it's Intel native, the pricing structure is really, really innovative this time. So before, if you're a consumer who wasn't in education, you had to buy the standard edition, which is a few hundred pounds. Now, they've made it to be the home and student edition, which means as long as you're not using it commercially, you can buy this entry-level package for Office, and it costs £99. Not only does it cost £99, but you get three licenses for that £99. So iWork suddenly got a whole lot of new competition from the industry leader in the field.
That's a very good point. Yeah, definitely that new pricing really puts the pressure on iWork. Element 6, that's your next one.
Yeah, Photoshop Element 6 debuted at Macworld this year. It's Intel native, it's got a new UI, but there's some just really cool features in it. It's got some nice sort of guides that walk you through the process and some good sort of best practice stuff that makes sure you don't do things in the wrong order as a sort of amateur working with images. But there's some really cool stuff in there that's drifted down, that's filtered down from CS3 as well. So one of the really nice features is if you've got a couple of group shots of people that you've taken, and in some of them some people are laughing and smiling, and some people, in some pictures they're looking and making silly faces, you can actually merge the two together in such a way as you can pick which bits you want from each one. It doesn't sound awfully sophisticated, and it doesn't sound surprising to anyone who's used Photoshop CS3, but the implementation here is fantastic. It's really simple to use. The results are superb. It was witchcraft. I was absolutely blown away when the guy demoed it to me.
All right, so those are your best picks, Chris, for the show. Misha, you had two, and let's begin with Taylor Technologies. We saw this little booth. It's a guy from South Korea, and we'll be actually talking to him later in the show because I just thought he was fascinating in terms of what he's trying to do for a product that's not even out yet, and he actually won Best of Show from another website for some of his innovative ideas. Tell us a little bit about what you thought was neat that he had.
Well, so what's cool about Taylor Technologies is that they have not one but three products that are sort of clever for the iPhone. And the fact that it's just this one guy more or less running the show makes it all the more impressive. The two that really stand out are this charging plate that allows you to clip a little device to the bottom of the iPhone or any dock-capable iPod. And then you literally just put it on the charging plate. You don't have to plug anything in, and it'll charge the device just as quickly as if you actually had a physical cable connection. Now, he does this for cell phones as well, and the implementation's a little bit better there because you buy his battery, so then you have the battery on your cell phone. You don't have to plug anything in because the battery itself has the contacts. But I think, you know, it's a clever charging solution for the iPhone if you don't want to be hassled with being tethered by a cable. The other clever product that he has is this Bluetooth headset. It resembles the Bluetooth headset that Apple offers, not quite so refined, but certainly subtle and attractive. It's going to be about half the price of what Apple charges. And the best part is it has an integrated USB plug in it. So you slide this little plug out and you can charge it directly in any USB port. And there's also some talk of actually building in a certain level of flash memory as well. So suddenly you've got this tiny little Bluetooth headset. It docks into any USB port, and it also doubles as your USB flash drive, which I just think is so cool and so clever.
Neat little products. Let's move on to your second, and that was Parallels Server, which was announced here. I think people were expecting it, maybe not this soon, but tell us about Parallels Server.
Well, so what Parallels Server allows you to do is, for the first time ever, it allows you to run multiple copies or multiple instances of Mac OS X Server on a single box. So obviously this is a very niche product. Virtualization is not new to the Mac. Obviously it's been around for a couple of years ever since the Intel Mac started shipping. But previously it's been used as a means to run Linux or Windows on a Mac. You could never actually run another copy of the Mac on the Mac, which is, you know, for most consumers not at all appealing to them. But for some who are testing different systems and configurations, it makes a lot of sense. And in the server world, where virtualization is just like the hottest buzzword, this allows a single Xserve suddenly to be able to run many different versions of Mac OS X server, so that instead of having a dedicated X server for your print server and a dedicated X server for your mail and internal communications, you can have a single box running multiple instances of OS X server autonomously so they don't interfere with anyone. And this is going to be fairly huge, I think, for the enterprise market. You know, VMware, Parallels' main competitor, is going to be coming out with a similar product, but Parallels, you know, is first to the punch, and for that, you know, they deserve some kudos.
It's politically quite important as well, because this is the first time that Apple's actually allowed anyone to do anything with OS X other than install it on Apple hardware. So, you know, politically, that's quite an important and quite radical move for them, and I hope we see that filtering even further. I hope they're even more imaginative with how they deal with virtualization and installing the OS onto different hardware.
So let's wrap it up here. Your impressions overall of the show compared to previous years, and you've been here for quite a few of them, Chris.
It's a great show. It's very busy. There's lots and lots of foot traffic. We're in Moscone South and Moscone West this time, the two different halls that Apple's the ITG are using for the show. There's not an awful lot of really cool stuff being launched. Yeah. It's an exciting show. Apple's there, the MacBook's there, it's fantastic. People are really excited. As I say, there's hordes, absolute swathes of people thundering through the show floors. But from my point of view, there's not an awful lot that's been launched that's really, really exciting. I think this is less of a, it's becoming much less of a show at which people launch things and more of a show at which people actually demonstrate products they already have.
I just thought about this. You know, in the last two shows, even Paris shows and London shows, we thought that they were too iPod-centric.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I think 2 years ago was the peak of the whole iPod madness. I think a couple of years ago we saw just insane, ridiculous numbers of iPod cases and docks and charging accessories and skins, and it was nuts. And the whole Mac thing became very dilute. It became very difficult for MD to actually access anything for the Mac, and it was worrying as well because Apple seemed to be tacitly acknowledging this and showing that you know, the iPod was more important than the Mac. But you're absolutely right. In the last couple of years, we've seen this really toning down. I think the balance is about right this time. There's still loads and loads of vendors here demoing OEM stuff and iPod skins. But the balance is much, much more swung in favor of the Mac.
Misha, your thoughts on the show. What do you think?
I think it's a really solid show. What really struck me the most is that it's the first expo in recent memory that I've been to, especially in the keynote, where it didn't seem like people walked away really unhappy. It seems like in the past, there's always been, you know, one product or a lack of an announcement that has people saying, oh, you know, like, this would have been so much better if. And I think you know, Apple did a wise thing. A week ago, they revved the Mac Pros ahead of Expo. People had been waiting for that system to be revved for a long time. So they, you know, they weren't setting themselves up to demo all this consumer stuff and leave all the pro users upset. So I really feel this has been a solid show. Solid products have been announced. The vibe is generally positive. No one seems unhappy with anything, with any of the announcements that have emerged, except for maybe the iPod Touch owners who have to pay money to get the new software. You know, so caveats aside of the MacBook Air, I think the response is great. You know, this isn't like a G4 Cube, which literally left the audience in New York stunned by the announcement, especially the pricing. This is a device that people, even if it's not practical, even if it's expensive, they still want it, and that in and of itself is pretty great.
The other thing to note as well is that all the vendors that I've spoke to, everybody's really, really bullish about the market. Everybody's phenomenally upbeat. You know, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, everybody was still coming out of that Gillimelio slump. It was insane. But now, everybody's really, really excited about the market. We've seen so many traditionally PC-only companies developing a Mac version. We've seen loads of them at this show. People doing screen sharing stuff, people doing enterprise stuff that's traditionally been only existing on the PC. Now they're going, hey, you know what, the Mac's cool. And I think a lot of that's actually driven by the fact that, you know, the CEO looks at something like the MacBook Air, goes, do you know what, that's really cool, I want one of those. And that starts filtering down through the company. We've seen so many more companies developing for the Mac and taking the Mac seriously as a credible alternative platform to Windows, and that's new.
Yeah, and definitely on that note, I mean, one company that sort of surprised me with an announcement was Avery, the label maker, who came out with, who announced for the first time ever they've got a Mac version of their software. So suddenly you can buy these, you know, really cool, fairly affordable label printers that normally you'd have to run in the past, you know, through Windows emulation or whatnot. They've got a native app on the Mac, and it's a quality app. You know, in the past we'd see these very PC-centric, right, you know,
port these PC things, yeah.
Exactly. Like, you load up this app, and it's running on your Mac, but it's not designed for the Mac. But they have this software, and they're proud of it. They want to show off how Mac-centric it is, and they're very excited about, you know, the new market that the Mac opens up for them. So I think Chris is absolutely right. The bullish vibe is definitely here, and, you know, that's undoubtedly what's contributing to the show, just overall seeming, you know, very positive and very solid.
Yeah, yeah, it really has been a positive show. Chris, Misha, thanks so much for the review of Mac Expo 2008 here in San Francisco. Misha Sakularopoulou is the associate producer of Mac Format this week. Chris Finn is deputy editor of Mac Format magazine. There was a wide array of new products from third-party companies announced at Expo, some we just discussed. But with so many, we decided to do this special Expo edition a little bit different. Instead of talking to a bunch of company spokespeople, many of which you'll hear in future shows, we decided to cut through the clutter and talk to just one company, a small little South Korean company we found that had a series of very unique products. Tucked away in the corner of the show's West Hall was Taylor Technologies. His booth would be passed up by most people because of its lack of glitzy signs and lights. But we were fascinated by how well thought out these products were. We like to call them diamonds in the rough. His name was Tony Capo Lim. Tony, you have four very interesting products here that I know are not available just yet. You're looking for distributors and you're into manufacturing now. But tell us a little bit about some of these. And let's begin with the mobile finger mouse from MIDI. Tell me about it and how it works.
So actually the mobile finger mouse is targeted for the mobile internet devices such as iPhone, iTouch, and any other small devices which has an internet access connection. So we think about that. When you browse the internet using small mobile devices, using the fingers or the touchpad, it's quite difficult to navigate the web. So that's the reason why I developed this kind of product. So this small mouse consists of two panes, so upper and lower panes. So you just scrub your thumb, slide up and down and left and right. It scrolls 360 degrees. You can easily scroll the web. So it's just like the conventional mouse. It's very easy.
And when you have to click, you just click the two together.
Yeah, sure. We have the right and left click. And in the near future, we are going to put a scroll features in this small, tiny mouse.
Right. So you could use that with the iPhone, basically, to move your fingers back and forth, basically, and then click and control, basically, your iPhone.
Yes, sure. But unfortunately, the Apple doesn't release the API to the public, so when they list that kind of features to the public, we are going to port our drivers into their devices.
Okay, so let's move on to the next product, and that's the iVolta wireless charging system. Some people might have heard of inductive charging, which charges batteries using electromagnetic induction, but this is a little bit different, right?
Right, so it's a conductive charging. It's like a mouse pad. On the plate, there's the circuit. It's very safe. So you just put your things on the plate, it automatically charges it.
It comes with the inductive plate or the pad, also comes with small little adapters that connect to iPods, iPhones, which then allow the availability to conduct the energy to the device.
Right, so we made a small adapter for iPod, iPhone, and any other small devices. So the lower side of adapter, there's the contact. So right here is a four contact.
Right.
So you just put this adapter on the plate. Mm-hmm. The contact directly connected to the plate.
Right.
It charges.
Right. And about how long does it take to charge a totally dead battery, say on an iPod?
Charging time is the same as the conventional charger.
All right, the next product is the USB lanyard earphones for the iPod Nano. Tell us about how that works.
So this is a typical lanyard earphones for Nano, but the key difference is we have integrated the USB cables into the unit. So you just put out this cable, and you can see the USB connector right here.
Right, it's a four-prong USB connector.
Right, so you just plug this to your computer. Mm-hmm. You can easily charge or sync your iPod.
Right.
So that means you don't need to carry a separate USB cables. So all the features are included in one single headphone units.
Now, you've done that with two other products which you have here, and let's talk about the USB multi-Bluetooth headset. It basically has a USB adapter on it as well.
Yeah, so it also has a USB adapter. So it's a Bluetooth headset for iPhones. It also works with other mobile phones which has Bluetooth features. The key function is it has a built-in USB connector right here.
Which just slides open?
Yeah, slides open. You just put these things to your computer, and it charges your headset unit. So we are going to put some memories into this device. So that means you can use this as your the flash drive.
So later you're going to come out with a model that actually has some memory in it to store for storage as well.
Yeah.
The final one is the USB multi-headset earphones for the iPhone. Tell us about it.
Yeah, it's the standard earphones headset for iPhone. It looks like the same one sold in the market.
It looks like a standard earphone adapter that you would get on any portable phone.
Yeah, that's right. It has stereo earphones and microphones and connector to iPhone. The difference is it has the built-in USB connectors right here. Just pull out and you can see the USB connector. That means this turns into USB cable for iPhone.
So it has multiple uses as a USB charging cable for the iPhone and also for iPods too.
That's right. So we already released this kind of product for Samsung mobile phones in Korea.
So those are your four products, very unique, very different. Again, not available here in the United States yet, right?
Right. So right now we are looking for distributors in the United States who can distribute this kind of product in the United States. Mm-hmm.
Now, I know you haven't set prices on any of these products, but I would assume, I know we didn't go over each individual product in terms of an idea of price range, but everything is going to be individually below, say, $80 U.S. is what you're thinking.
Yeah, that's right. Below $80.
And what time frame do you think these products are going to be out in the United States?
So if you find a good distributors in the United States, it can be released in less than second quarter.
You've really thought these products out in terms of their uniqueness to allow them to have multiple uses. I think that's the thing that's most interesting about them.
Yeah, that's right. So that's a good point. Our company is strong at design. So actually we have in-house designer. Key difference features of our product is we aim at design plus multiple users and convenience for users.
Tony, thanks so much for the time.
Thank you for the time.
Right. Tony Campo Lim was president of Taylor Technologies in Seoul, South Korea. And that's it for another edition of Mac Format this week. My thanks to Chris Finn and our associate producer, Misha Sakleropoulou. Join us again for our next edition on Monday, the 4th of February. Until then, I'm Brad Gibson from San Francisco. Thanks for joining us.